free energy now.
Imagine a world in which each home has its own power generator that obtains its energy in such a way that no fuel has to be added. Imagine every vehicle being able to run without ever stopping for fuel. Imagine each appliance having its own power source that never has to be recharged. That is the world of the future. Join with us now as we track our progress towards such a world.
Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Sterling Allen. You can join us online at freeenergynow.net. By Stephen Lacey, who is the podcast producer and editor for Renewable Energy World, the leading news site covering conventional renewable energies. His podcast is ranked number one. Tonight, he will be in the guest seat. We'll be asking him what technologies look most promising to him and on the very surface of renewable energy world number one, renewable energy job service. The show.
Hey, Sterling, how you doing? Good to be on.
Yeah, likewise. We are comrades in the service of informing people about the great things that are going on the planet.
Yeah, indeed. There's a lot going on.
Yeah, I have to tell you, I was down at the Al Kirby, the Coordinating Delta Conference, and I was like, you, I heard the photograph, I can't, okay, it wouldn't be, but anyway, yeah, let's talk for a second before we get into the first primary question, which is what has you most excited in all the things that you're covering. You've been doing this, what, since 2006?
Yeah, yep. Since mid-2006, and we've been around as an organization for about 10 years, so we've been covering this stuff for a while now.
So my first series of questions for the first two segments, for the most part, will be along the lines of what do you find most interesting, but before we go there, let's just give a really quick overview of what is Renewable Energy World.
We are an online business-to-business publication. We actually started off as renewable energy, or started off as solaraccess.com, and we were really sort of a clearinghouse for information on products for manufacturers, installers, and distributors. And then we quickly realized that in order to keep people at the site, we needed more news and information about what was happening in the industry. So we became a business-to-business magazine. And then we branched out to all renewables within a couple of years. And now we have a range of assets in the industry. We have a couple of magazines, print publications, and we have the website. So we're covering all conventional renewable energy technologies, as you would define them. We're covering wind, solar, geothermal, biomass, hydro, fuel cells, and looking at the technological progress, markets all around the world, and financial issues as well. So really a multi-pronged approach to looking at all these technologies.
Since about 2002, I would say, in my job is looking at some of the more exotic technologies. We also cover some of the more conventional renewable energies. Of course, conventional is a relative statement. There's a statement we have. He is the crackpot. And
conventional is a relative term.
Yeah. So you know, for some of these cutting edge solar things might be unconventional, but for us, because it's solar, it's considered conventional.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's relative.
Yeah. And I mean, you guys have an interesting range of coverage as well. You know, sort of dabble in that conventional area and certainly look at a lot of technologies that we don't.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, those are very intriguing. But yeah, we generally have stuck to those technologies that I outlined before. just because of how well developed those markets are comparatively to, you know, what you cover. And of course, you know, they're still very nascent compared to the fossil energy industries. So that's what we're working to do, to promote those technologies and to make them a bigger part of the energy mix. And we all believe that they can be.
I think it would be safe to say that you cover the more mature renewable
yeah.
energy solutions, whereas we cover maybe some of the more nascent, you know, the up-and-coming renewable energies that are around the end of this. We're trying to say, do they have a working prototype?
Right. You're breaking up just a little bit, so sometimes I'm having a little bit of a hard time understanding some of your questions. But
I apologize. We'll have to look into what that's about. Let's get back to our questions now. Now we can And last question: Have you interviewed and written for Renewable Energy World and whatever you were doing before that? What technologies? And when I say technologies, I'm talking about it could be a specific company or it could be a specific genre of technology. What has you most excited?
The technologies, I mean, all of the technologies excite me in different ways. And I think right now the force to be reckoned with in renewables is the wind industry. Now, here in the United States, we only get about 2% of our electricity from wind, so it's still very small. In certain countries in Europe, like in Germany, they get around 7%. And again, it's still small, but much, much bigger than here in the U.S. I am, however, very heartened by the maturity that I see in the industry and the robustness of the supply chain, of the components supply chain, and these big, world-class, very mature companies getting into that area that are pouring massive amounts of money and really helping standardize the components that go into developing wind turbines. So I think, you know, in other areas, they're still trying to work through a lot of the inconsistencies in developing these technologies. And in the wind industry, I think a lot of that has been figured out, and therefore costs have gone down faster than many of the other technologies. And here in the United States, electricity generated from wind is, in many areas of the country, cost competitive, if not cheaper, than electricity from natural gas, especially in the Midwest and in Texas. And because of that, and because of you know, that maturity, you're seeing incredibly large projects being developed, some of which are 3 to 4 times the average coal-fired power plant. And, you know, typically renewables have not gotten to that scale, especially when you look at solar. Solar offers a lot of promise, but it just hasn't reached that scale yet. And wind has gotten to that point. And so I'm very excited about what I'm seeing in that space. Now, of course, we are seeing a lot of problems associated with the financial crisis, and a lot of those very mature companies that are in that space are having a hard time, and so therefore we've seen a drop in the financing of projects. We've seen a lot of slowdown in demand for components and for materials, and therefore a lot of those manufacturers that I talked about that are mature are really facing quite a squeeze. So, you know, we are facing a lot of problems in the short term, but the prospects for the wind industry, to me, are the highest of all the technologies currently.
Why do you think it is that this next bubble, so to speak, not bubble, that's a bad term, but the next big thing is not kicking in where financially, even economically, it seems like rather than serve it in that savior role, so to speak, they've been hit like everyone else and have been having a hard time.
Well, that's because, the credit markets at the top are coming, the credit comes from a relatively few players, and even the smallest guys need to access capital from those big players. And unfortunately, it's been tough for everyone. With that said, although we're seeing all these problems in the industry, we have been hit less than other sectors. And we're already starting to rebound while, other companies in the manufacturing sector, for example, have yet to see a rebound. You look at the auto industry, they're still waiting to bottom out. And many people have said that, the bottom in the wind and the PV industry hit a quarter ago, and we're already on the rise. And that's primarily because the government has recognized the importance of clean energy and has created the policies to stimulate more demand. But we've been hit like everyone else because, we're still bound by that access to capital, by the cost of materials, the cost of financing projects. When there are less players able to finance projects, that drives up the cost of financing those projects. So all around, we've faced the same problems because, we get our money from the same sources that all these other sectors do. And I think, that's a good thing. When it comes to financing projects, we're not really that alternative. We still rely on the same big banks, the same big Wall Street firms. Go ahead.
Go ahead. A couple of those. Great.
Oh, no. I do think that we are seeing a rebound in the clean energy sector where we are not in other sectors, and I'm very heartened by that. All the reliable figures that I've seen from very good tracking firms in this space have said that the bottom was the first quarter of this year, whereas the bottom has yet to hit in many, many other industries.
Technology has been around for, we could even argue, millennia. Solar, of course, has also been around in terms of people understanding the energy that comes from sun to a certain extent, but in terms of turning it into an energy applicable technology, such as wind mules or whatever, solar energy is a little door. That's what contributes to the wind maturity.
I actually didn't catch the last part of that question. Could you repeat that?
Yeah, I'm just comparing, looking at wind historically over the last centuries in millennia, that wind as an energy source has been hard. What's that break? What's the factor in making wind and more mature technologies you were mentioning?
It sounds like we're coming up to the break.
Yeah.
I seriously can't believe you're going to do this.
Hey, man, believe it.
Look, I know you'll learn stuff that'll help you with a job in engineering, but, buddy, listen, once you walk through those doors,
Look, I'm still going to be here at home.
Huh?
I'm
going to
keep my job, work full time, hang out with you, and be a soldier.
I don't get it.
You're completely clueless about the National Guard, aren't you?
The National Guard is a unique opportunity and a unique experience. You're a soldier. You serve your community as well as your country. You train part-time close to home. And you do it all while you work or attend college full-time.
Look at you. Now you're even thinking about it. You're going to walk in with me, aren't you?
All right, wipe that smile off your face.
Oh, come on. You know you want to come in.
Take the first steps to building your career while serving your community and country part-time. Start at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Arizona National Guard. Aired by the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
I'm having a great time. Ted, you have something dangling from your chin.
Okay, here. Did I get it?
Not yet. It's right under your, I think it is your chin.
Oh, yeah, my double chin. I'm losing it thanks to small step number 85. When eating out, choose smaller portions.
I see. Well, it's working. I think your chin just fell into my ceviche.
Take a small step to get healthy at smallstep.gov, a public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
I plugged the Scan Gauge 2 into my car in 10 seconds and could read my gas mileage instantly. It helped me save on fuel by improving my driving habits. If my check engine light turns on, I can figure out why without paying a mechanic. This device has saved me money.
The Scan Gauge also provides information about engine load, ignition timing, and on my vehicle, it tells me the transmission temperature.
The Scan Gauge is manufactured right here in Mesa. Call us at 480-656-3842 or visit us online at scangauge.com. Again, that's 480-656-3842.
Free energy, now!
Welcome back to the show. Serving on Come Back At You from Eagle Mountain, Utah. We're joined this evening by Stephen Lacey, who is the podcast producer and editor for Renewable Energy World. We were talking about the Polish man. No, it's Steve saying that he's the one as coal and natural gas and the cheapest conventional renewable or conventional energy sources, fossil fuel based, and that's got him very excited. And I'm just curious as to with wind technology being maybe more mature for the solar, if that's a function of that story, but that's really the main the wind technology and use ever soar for a longer period of time, if that contributes to that maturity of the field now.
Yeah, generally, solar, you know, the materials costs in solar have been far greater because of the chemical costs. And, you know, generally, there is a lot more money poured into the wind space. And over time, that research and development and that constant testing of the product in the 70s and 80s drove down costs faster than in solar. And generally, solar has been held back because of the high cost of silicon, which is the semiconductor used to generate electricity. And companies now have been experimenting for decades with new conducting materials, different chemicals, like cadmium telluride, like copper, indium, gallium, and diselenide, with different types of silicon, like amorphous silicon, that can drive down these material costs. But it's the high cost of silicon that's really sort of inhibited the industry's downward cost trend. Go back to the maturity of the supply chain in wind, because it expanded so much faster, costs obviously were driven down along that supply chain, and now you can install a wind turbine for around $1 a watt. And right now the installed cost of, actually it's about $1.75 a watt, I believe, and the cost of an installed solar system because of the labor costs, and because of the material cost, and because of the still fairly immature supply chain, it's around $7 or $8 a watt. Dramatic difference there. Generally, I think that the solar industry has just had a harder time because of those materials that it's limited by, and you've seen that the solar industry has tried to get beyond those by looking for new chemicals and materials for electricity conducting.
There was a story at MIT Technology Review today referring to a recent conference in Washington, D.C., where some solar industry experts were saying that the federal government has misplaced emphasis on research into futuristic technologies, and that rather than support research and development, what they ought to be doing is supporting existing technologies, such as First Solar, that has already bought the cost of solar power to under $1 per watt on the utility scale. What would you say about that assessment?
You know, I really think that there are a lot of undiscovered game-changing and incremental improvements in technology, and I think that a focus on research and development over the next 5 years is going to be crucial to bringing some of those to the surface. With that said, I think that they have an excellent point, because a lot of these technologies are already for the market, and I think a lot of consumers believe that renewables will be the next big thing, and it will continually be the next big thing. And so you hear a lot of people saying, well, hold off because the cost of solar will continue to come down, or the next technology that comes out will be better. Well, at some point, you have to encourage people to adopt current technologies, which are excellent, and which will progress the next generation of technologies. And so I do believe that we need to start putting more money into these well-developed companies. But you know what? I think that's already happened. If you look at the stimulus package, $67 billion will go toward renewables and energy efficiency to companies already developing projects, you know, manufacturers setting up shop, developing products that are already on the market. That is happening. And perhaps we need more of an emphasis on that in different ways, but you know, I think that the government is doing a pretty darn good job at this point in terms of stimulating both research and development and current market current technologies that are already ready for the market. That cadmium telluride product that you're talking about from First Solar is an excellent example. You know, they're now one of the world leaders in manufacturing. They popped up in the last couple of years and really beat out some of the Japanese manufacturers. They've, as you said, they've driven down the cost of solar to below $1 a watt manufacturing. And the costs are much higher when the installed costs are much higher, of course, but on the manufacturing side, they're below $1 a watt. And that is really, really exciting. And there are other companies out there that are on the verge of that breakthrough, and they should be supported for sure.
What about thin film solar? I know there's some roll-to-roll processes where these things, they're printed out like in a printing press for a newspaper, for example, and they're able to bring the cost way down. What's the status of that industry?
A company called NanoSolar is developing a roll-to-roll printing process, and they've been seen as the leader there. And there's been a lot of questions about how well developed that printing process is, and you know, they're pretty secretive about what they've been up to. I've tried to keep in touch with their CEO, and you know, they have no obligation, as a private company, they have no obligation to release their progress, but they'll come out every now and then with a status update. They've posted some video on YouTube and it said that they're ready to reach the dollar per watt or under cost barrier. But I think that those roll-to-roll processes are still fairly nascent. And I, from what I hear, it's still going to be a couple of years before that becomes a ubiquitous part of the solar industry.
Uh-huh. You know, really quick, as a tangent, how do you hook up the electrical components of a thin film? I haven't ever seen a setup. Where do the electrodes come out?
It's much like a regular solar panel out the back of the module.
Okay.
And the conduits, they all come out of the back of the module. And I've seen a couple of utility scale installations, and they all come out the back essentially.
What about wave technology? I think you guys put an article out a month ago about wave technology being somewhere around 15 years behind solar and wind.
Yeah. The wave tidal current marine energy technologies generally are so extremely nascent. You know, we've got about 10 megawatts of the wave and tidal devices installed. And we've got, you know, a couple hundred megawatts of some other tidal barrage technologies. Those are basically like a conventional hydropower dam in, let's say, a tidal estuary. The companies in the marine energy space are really in the very early stages of experimentation. And, you know, we've actually seen 150, 160 years of experimentation. People have been experimenting with tide wheels and oscillating wave power systems for you know, over a century now. But yet still, this industry is incredibly nascent.
And is that because the ocean is so unforgiving and the forces involved?
Mm-hmm. You're taking a technology with complex electronics and very expensive materials and putting it in the harshest environment on Earth and expecting it to survive. Very difficult.
Well, when we come back from break at the bottom of the hour here, let's talk about your company, what you guys do.
Sounds good.
Live streaming audio on demand, 24 hours a day. Log on now at 1100kfnx.com. kfnx.com.
CNN Radio, I'm Greg Black. Still no deal yet in the Senate to approve another $2 billion for the Cash for Clunkers program. Auto dealer Jeff Pahanka complains the program was underfunded from the start.
The original intent was to spend $5 billion on the program, but only $1 billion was as allocated. And certainly that's only going to do so much. It's gotten cash starved, especially because consumers have really embraced this program.
Former President Clinton is in North Korea tonight trying his hand at diplomacy. He's hoping to negotiate the release of two American journalists who've been held there since March. Australian authorities believe four men arrested on terrorism charges were planning a major assault on a military base there. Investigators say the men had ties to a Somali insurgent group called Al-Shabaab. Investors kicking off the month of August with a nice rally on Wall Street. Both the S&P 500 and the Dow were up today, the Dow hitting a new nine-month high. This is CNN Radio.
We're going to see the rebirth of the monsoon this week, and that means some more clouds that we haven't seen in a while. Hopefully some showers and rain around the valley, mainly in the late night or early morning hours. Daytime highs through Friday, 108 to 110. Jim Hopp, KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
Currently in downtown Phoenix, it's 103 degrees.
Win a trip to Lake Powell. Hear the details on Healthy House Call Monday through Friday, 9 to 10 a.m. We give you the secrets to wellness, longevity, and abundant energy, helping you feel psyched up, tuned in, turn on a megawire for sound. That's what I'm talking about.
The mainstream media has lied. They fooled you. Wall Street was corrupt. Your money is safe in the market, they said. You'll make 8 to 10% a year as long as you stay in. Don't be fooled again. Insure your assets. Call Desert Gold Exchange at 602-787-5950. Gold is up nearly 300% in the last decade and has never gone to zero. Proper diversification 8 years ago would have your retirement account positive. Act now to protect your retirement at 602-787-5950. Executives with big money firms are predicting another 100% gain, and there are a number of worldwide factors supporting this claim. Benefit from this bull market, protect your assets, roll over your IRA, and don't be fooled by other corrupt gold dealers and their prices. Call Desert Gold Exchange at 602-787-5950. That's 602-787-5950. Or visit us on the web at desertgoldexchange.com and request your free investor's package. That's desertgoldexchange.com.
Don't miss Imus in the Morning, Arizona's news talk leader. Imus in the Morning. Only on KFNX News Talk Radio 1100.
Free energy now.
We really want to change the world today.
Eagle Mountain, Utah.
We'll always take donations there for sure. Or some hard work volunteering. Give a little and you get back more. You know the future's looking brighter. We just want to help the world today.
Free energy now.
That's the toll-free caller number if you're listening live, 866-536-1100. We're broadcasting out of KFNX in Phoenix, Arizona, live. And for those of you who are listening online through streaming or download, we welcome you as well. Tonight we are talking to Stephen Lacey. He is with Renewable Energy World. He's the number one ranked podcaster there. Not just there, but their podcast is ranked number one among the conventional renewable energy technologies. And in the first segment of the show, we were talking about different kind of the sector, solar, wind, tide, technologies in general. What I'd like to do in the last half of the show is to talk about the company Renewable Energy World, the new service, the directory. What is it that you guys do there?
Well, again, we are a business-to-business publication. We provide information for professionals in the industry and interested consumers as well. But generally, we're geared toward the professional working in the solar, wind, geothermal, hydro, biomass, biofuel spaces. We are covering markets all around the world, and we are about 60% North American, 40% international. We are pretty heavily focused on North America and Europe, where a lot of these markets are pretty well developed. I wouldn't say North America, they're terribly well developed, but that's where we're based. In Europe, they're far more developed, so we are covering that area pretty heavily. Across that range of technologies, we're really looking at the policy environment and how the policy environment fosters the development of those technologies. And, of course, tracking companies in the public and private space in the financial markets. And that is a really key piece of developing these technologies and bringing them to scale. Tracking where the money's going is crucial because these industries are getting large enough now where, as I said before, the major financial institutions, Wall Street investment firms, insurance companies are seeing this as a major vehicle for investment. And so we're sort of figuring out what those firms' roles are in this industry worldwide, which is a pretty heady task to understand.
If I understand right, for specific technologies and companies, you allow them to post a about us page, so to speak, where...
Yeah, we call those a microsite or a total access account. That was one of the original ideas of the website, actually. We were Solar Access, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, mm-hmm. and we were focused less on news and information and more on company profiles, and on how we could create the vehicle for companies to share information about themselves to other companies and to prospective consumers. Again, we found that in the news side of things kept people on the site more, so we gravitated toward that. But we did keep the company directory and the total access sites, which we call them, and companies can use that to publish press releases, and if they have a high enough account, then they can feature those press releases on the home page, and then we might use some of those as tools for our own stories. And that's a pretty significant source of revenue for us as well, because companies are paying to have those microsites on our website.
You're doing there at Renewable Energy World is very similar to what we're doing, except more for the extreme or exotic technologies. And we use the wiki format over at PezWiki to allow companies to post a feature page about what they're doing.
Right.
And sometimes we'll grab those, very often we'll grab those and put them up in our news, which gets a lot more traffic, driving people to see what they're doing and what they're up to. So, yeah.
And I'm sure curious. You guys get a lot more content because of that, right? I mean, that, but there's only so much, you know, one or a group of people can do. So, you know, having the companies have the access to spreading some of that information can sort of help you guide more information on the site. I'm sure, right? That's better for you.
Yeah, that's the idea. Now, I'm curious, in terms of the operation of your business, in the age of the Internet where it's possible to telecommute, so to speak, do you actually have an office where people show up and clock in, or do you work from home? How's that working? How many of there are you in this company?
We do have an office. We actually have a very nice office located in Peterborough, New Hampshire. And being a web business, we can have this business in the Northeast. Definitely not in the hot spot of U.S. renewable energy development, but we travel all over the place, and it's an office of 13 people. When I started there in 2006, we were 5 people, so we have seen significant growth since then. And, you know, it's a great work environment. Our founder and CEO, Jim Callahan, is just an incredibly good guy, is very adamant in fostering this work-life balance atmosphere and making sure that we work really hard, but that, you know, our personal lives are extremely important in what we do as well, and maintaining happiness in the workplace. So, you know, we have a crew of 13 people cranking out every day, a pleasure to work with, and, you know, we all go out and have fun afterward as well. And on the news side of things, you know, we're only 3 people. So the news is one of the most integral parts of the website, of course, and 3 people cranking that out is quite hectic at times, but we love it. We absolutely love it.
How often do you get on the road and go out and look at stuff?
Gosh, you know, I'd say it's between 15 and 30 trips a year. This year it's probably going to be closer to 30. And some, you know, last year it was probably closer to 12. The year before that it was over that. So it really depends. I mean, this year has been a very heavy travel year for us. There's so much going on in the industry. There are a lot of conferences to go to, and there are a lot of great projects happening all over the country that we want to visit. So we'll often correlate those trips, those site visits with some other conference, with other conferences happening around the country or around the world, really.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I'll be up in doing some company visits this coming week. On Thursday, I'll be heading up north to the island of Vinylhaven, where they're developing a 5-megawatt project that will power the island. And, you know, there was a lot of social friction associated with that project, and they've since gone ahead with it because there was a pretty involved stakeholder process, and people realized that they were going to get a financial benefit from the project. And, you know, it's a really interesting story on how to combat social friction when you have these very visible renewable energies in people's backyards. And so I'll go up there for a couple of days, do some interviews, and then I'm going to head through Portland to go visit the Low Impact Hydro Institute, and then I'll go over an hour west with a gentleman from that institute to a very large hydroelectric facility that received one of the highest certifications of low-impact hydro, and then I'll head south to visit a company that's developing a 500-megawatt pump storage project in the tidal estuary. So, you know, that was all just designed myself. I said, oh, this company has an interesting project, and then there are these other sites around there, so why not go do it, and then I'll take a week and visit those companies, and then maybe take a day or two on the side to go enjoy the main coast, personally. So it's really, really an interesting job, sort of get to travel around the country to conferences and to sites and see what people are up to. I mean, there's just so much interesting stuff happening in the industry. It's really, really remarkable and a lot of fun. And, of course, everyone's so excited about it, they want you to come see it. So it's very easy to call people up, and having a renewable energy world behind us, you know, having a reputable news organization that people know about in the industry, and we can say, hey, I can say that I'm writing this story or working on this podcast or whatever, or working on background, can I come visit? And they'll, of course, accommodate us, more likely than not.
Yeah. Now, I'm curious, when you do a podcast yourself, how often is that?
That is once a week. We've been doing that once a week for the last 3 years or so. And that's started a pretty significant following. When I started out, we were probably getting about 500 to 1,000 downloads a week, and now we're at about 16,000-17,000 downloads a week. So we've definitely increased.
That's great.
Yeah.
I'm curious, with the economy hitting most sectors and even the renewable energy sector, how has that affected Renewable Energy World as a company? Did you slow down a little bit in the last, let's say, year, for example?
Yeah, we saw an interesting shift, I'd say. We did see a bit of a slowdown because we are advertising-based. And what happened was, you know, we rely on a lot of these major companies that have pretty large advertising contracts with us, you know, yearly advertising contracts for a lot of different types of advertising on our site. And so, you know, we were used to, some of the sales guys were used to getting these really big contracts and, you know, of course, lots and lots of smaller contracts. But all of a sudden, the companies are taking a wait-and-see approach. So instead of signing, you know, a very large yearly contract, they're going to sign a quarterly contract or maybe just a monthly contract. And so that really changed our sales process dramatically. And we had to work, you know, three times as hard to get the same amount of revenue that we were expecting last year. So, yeah, it's definitely impacted the business, but, you know, we're looking to hire a couple more people. Our sales team has done a great job, and we're still growing as a business. So even in the dismal economy, we've persevered, which is pretty exciting. There's a lot to be said about the industry when you look at that situation.
Yeah. Well, we've got one more break, and when we come back, I'd like to talk about your renewable energy jobs portion of your site and that service.
Wonderful. Look forward to it.
Somebody's got to say it.
What does a Democrat do when he gets in power?
That's why Neil Bortz is on the radio.
He wants to raise taxes. It's as natural as running the football across the goal line. It is natural as putting that basketball through the hoop. That's what you do. And if you're a Democrat and you get an office, you raise taxes. That's what you do. You're a Democrat.
More than you really want to know. The Neil Bortz Show. Weekday mornings at 10 a.m. on KFNX.
If the IRS tells you that you still owe back taxes, what can you do? Or if the tax collector threatens you with wage garnishments, bank levies, or penalties, what are your options? As an honest, hard-working American, you do have rights. So if you owe the IRS at least $15,000, call American Tax Relief. They've helped thousands of people like you eliminate up to 85% of their delinquent taxes. If you qualify, American Tax Relief can settle your tax debts for less than you owe.
Remove penalties and interest.
And get the collector off your case. So don't let your tax problem get worse. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation and see how much money they can save you. Call 800-786-8910.
If you qualify, you can save up to 85% of the taxes you owe. So call right now.
Call 800-786-8910.
800-786-8910.
800-786-8910. That's 800-786-8910.
I plugged the ScanGauge 2 into my car in 10 seconds and could read my gas mileage instantly. It helped me save on fuel by improving my driving habits. If my check engine light turns on, I can figure out why without paying a mechanic. This device has saved me money.
The ScanGauge also provides information about engine load, ignition timing, and on my vehicle, it tells me the transmission temperature.
The ScanGauge is manufactured right here in Mesa. Call us at 480-656-3842 or visit us online at ScanGauge.com. Again, that's 480-656-3842.
Free energy, now!
Sterling Allen coming back at you. Here's one for you music lovers out there. As you've come to appreciate our free energy news service for exploring the cutting edge of clean energy, eMusic.com is a great place to find music for the more obscure yet very talented artists. Go to eMusic.com/energy, that's our affiliate page, to get a 14-day free trial with 35 free song downloads. If you cancel before 14 days, you get to keep all 35 tracks for free. eMusic is the number one site for independent music with more than 3.2 million tracks to choose from in MP3 format, providing the best value in digital music. Try them out at eMusic.com/energy. We're talking tonight to Stephen Lacey from Renewable Energy World. We've been talking about what technologies he finds interesting, the sector in general, as well as their company. The Renewable Energy World is, they've got 13 people working there now. I've been following them for about 8 years, pulling from their news service to put things in our news. I've been wanting to have this interview for quite some time, actually, and I'm glad Stephen's agreed to come on and talk about it. One of the things, before we get into kind of a little bit of a fun chit-chat, tell us about your job service. You have what you call the number one renewable energy job service.
Absolutely. Well, we wrote out that job service last year, that's been an interesting service that our parent company that we merged with last year has provided us, PennEnergyJobs.com. And we've gotten a lot of traffic through that job site. In fact, yeah, I don't know the stat today, but a significant share of our traffic comes through the job site because the jobs market is heating up, although it's a little slowed down a little bit because of the financial crisis. Everyone wants to know how they can get into this industry, whether they be on the marketing side or an engineer or on the financial side. You know, there are so many ways to get into the industry. So, we've looked at compete.com, and that's how we base our figures, and we do have the most traffic of any of the job sites. And we've seen a really interesting rise and fall, actually, of jobs on the site because of the financial crisis. And we really had a ton of jobs before the fall of this year. And then when the crisis really hit in October, November, in the December time frame, we saw jobs drop dramatically on our website. And since then, they've picked up and gone down a little bit. We still see this sort of roller coaster ride of these jobs available. But it's a really good service for us as a company.
How competitive is that? For people who are wanting jobs, how competitive is the job market for renewable energy jobs?
It's pretty darn competitive out there. Especially right now where there's so much interest but there are limited jobs. And I actually wrote a blog post about this the other day because I had a conversation with three or four different people at different times. You know, they all expressed the same sentiment, and that was, I've been looking for a job in this industry for a year and a half now, or a year, and I still haven't found one. Where in the heck is this green collar jobs movement that I keep hearing about? And I'm very sympathetic to that because I do hear a lot of those concerns. However, I do hear just as many success stories. But the fact of the matter is, we have seen a slowdown in jobs. There have been layoffs in this industry, just as there have been everywhere else. And it's more difficult and more competitive to get into this industry. So people should be aware of that. Anybody who is really looking for a job in this industry, keep looking, because companies out there are looking to hire. You know, I do talk to the HR people. And the woman who runs our jobs board talks to the HR departments and various companies way more than I do. And these companies are looking to hire many more people in the coming months, in the coming year. So I am a firm believer that this so-called green collar jobs movement will heat up, although I don't necessarily think it will take this monumental form that some people claim it will. I don't really know how it'll play out. It'll certainly be very large, and will benefit many, many people, but I just don't know how quickly it will ramp up in the next year, say.
What about the entrepreneur who has just a real go-getter attitude and just has this outlook that, you know, I can go out there and make something work? What do you think the likelihood is that they'll be able to make a go of it?
Well, it really depends on how much of a go-getter they are, because in the energy industry, as you well know, Sterling, it's just extremely capital-intensive, and especially because you're dealing with sort of a lot of these unconventional technologies that are still in the extremely early stages of development, it is very hard to bring some of these technologies to market. And we have a lot of wind at our backs right now, and so it is a lot easier today because angel investors, major venture capital firms, and even friends and family see this as an important opportunity. But it takes a long time to bring a technology to scale that's large enough that any significant investor would want to touch it. So you're looking at a 5, 6, 7, maybe even 10-year time frame as an entrepreneur. And I hear a lot of stories from people who have given up because they feel like the money is just not there to develop these technologies. And I've heard a lot of success stories from people who have found those interest investors who are willing to put in the time and patience to develop these technologies. And, you know, a lot of the big ones that we see today came from very small startup companies, one or two people who felt like they had a technology and they really tried to progress it and ended up having some success. So I'd say, if you really have that entrepreneur attitude, if you really can hack it, things look good for you. And if you have a technology that is going to work and you can prove that it works, then, this market is certainly bright.
Okay, now for the last part of this show, let's talk about free energy is what it's often referred to. I try and redefine the term free energy so that I include solar, wind, geothermal, tide, the conventional free energy, as I call it, because you don't have to pay for it. You don't have to pay for the sun to turn on each morning and turn off at night. It's there. It's free for the taking. And so I call that free energy, and what I try and do by that is make the leap less severe when you're looking at new things that are more exotic where you don't necessarily know where the energy is coming from. You've got a magnet motor that's spinning and physics says that's supposed to be impossible, yet there it is. And, you have to wrap a new model of physics around it to figure out what's going on and why it's working. But that it is working is certainly to be a very interesting thing. And so I'm curious, my perception is that people who are out in what I would call the fringe, people who believe in the possibilities of the magnet motor, over-unity electromagnetic systems, cold fusion, radiant energy, zero-point energy, some of these things that I would call non-traditional or non-conventional. How is the industry in general, and how about you in particular, you being in this context, the renewable energy world, the 13 people that hang out each day doing what you guys do there, how do you view these technologies?
I think generally within the prism of our coverage, we do see them as fringe, and we generally do not cover them. I do keep a sort of a file of all the unique technologies that people send me and sort of store those away. However, most people in the industry, I think, are very skeptical of a lot of these technologies that you outlined. Some of them are borderline, I wouldn't say hateful, but some of them feel very vitriolic. They really try to push this stuff to the fringe as much as they can. And, I certainly don't take that attitude. I personally am not willing to support a theory yet that breaks the first and second law of thermodynamics. I'm certainly willing to explore the possibilities if there are folks out there who are developing these technologies. I think we need to encourage, however nascent and however fringe as we can define them, I think we need to encourage that sort of innovation. Now, I think a lot of people in the industry are worried about as the scammers, people who are not just toying with the possibilities and looking at this from a very strict sort of physics perspective or an engineering perspective, they're really looking to use this as a market opportunity and seize the fervor around clean energy to make a quick buck. And I think that's what scares people most. Not that these technologies are being explored, but that they could be exploited to hurt the consumer and therefore hurt the image of clean energy as something that's possible and real.
So they view it as kind of reflecting on themselves as being in the clean energy sector.
Absolutely. And again, I'm a firm believer that we should be exploring these technologies. You know, I don't necessarily believe that they exist, but you know, if there are folks out there that are willing to take time to put some money into this, even though science has not supported them being realistic.
You've been listening to Free Energy
Why
Now,
not?
Brought to you
yes.
by PBS.
We need to get your website out there, renewableenergyworld.com. Thanks for joining us, Stephen. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks a lot, Sterling. I really appreciate you having me on. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and you're doing good work, and we're doing good work, and we're all doing it for the cause of the industry.
Energy Technologies at PESWiki.com. That's PESWiki.com. PES. The Pure Energy Systems Information Network.